Welcome to the Dialogue Studio, a podcast series brought to you by the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue. My name is Lillian, and I am the program manager here at the Ikeda Center, and I will be your host for this new series. Informed by the dialogue philosophy of Buddhist educator, peace builder, and founder of our center, Daisaku Ikeda, this series will explore the transformational practice of dialogue and why it is important, especially in this current moment. What is genuine dialogue and how can we connect with others more deeply? These are just some of the questions we hope to explore with all of you. In these episodes, you will hear from individuals from all walks of life sharing what dialogue means to them and how they are practicing it in their daily lives. We will also introduce the various approaches and strategies we practice here at the center. For Daisaku Ikeda, the more severe the challenges we face, the more crucial it is that we persist in dialogue, because dialogue has the power to break down the walls of mistrust, hatred, and division in the hearts of people everywhere. We hope you will join us in this endeavor to transform our world one dialogue at a time. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Dialogue Studio. I hope you enjoyed last month's episode where I spent a little time unpacking what dialogue means to us at the Ikeda Center and also highlighting some key points from Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy and practice of dialogue. In these next few episodes, I will be speaking to a few youth in our Ikeda Center community about their experiences with dialogue, specifically an experiment they participated in at the Ikeda Center, where they were paired with scholars from the Boston area. In groups of three, they met multiple times over the course of 6 months and talked about anything and everything, from their childhoods to feeling lost after college, to trauma, to mental health, to nature, to the importance of being vulnerable, and the list goes on. All to answer the question of, what kind of inner transformation does one experience through sustained dialogue with others, informed by Daisaku Ikeda's practice and philosophy of dialogue? Today, I will be speaking with Nandini Choudhury about her experience participating in this dialogue project, what she learned and took away, and how she's continuing to practice dialogue in her daily life. Nandini was paired with another young professional, Prachi Jan, and Dr. Bernice Lerner, who is the author of All the Horrors of War, The Triumph of Wounded Souls, and the former director of Boston University's Center for Character and Social Responsibility. All right, then, let's jump in and meet Nandini.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nandini, and I currently live in New York City. I moved here actually in August of last year, and I moved from Boston. I used to be in Boston, and that's how I kind of got familiar with the Ikeda Center. And yeah, I currently work as a data analyst with a hospital health system, and I do global health research, working on mainly on a project in Nepal.
Wonderful. Thank you, Nandini, for being with us today. And yeah, we really wanted to talk about dialogue. And so one of the things that we've been thinking a lot about lately is the dialogue project that you participated in 2019, which seems like lifetimes ago. There were eight of you who came together to participate in this, I think it was 5 to 6 month dialogue project where you were able to engage in sustained dialogue in small groups. I was wondering if you could share just overall your experience participating in that project. If you were explaining the project to someone for the first time, you know, what would you share with them?
Yeah, I think, you know, from what I remember, the project was born out of this idea, let's really test out dialogue and see, right? Like, because we often talk about dialogue at the Ikeda Center, but what does that really look like in practice? And I remember the youth committee talking about that, and it was, yeah, presented as we would be paired up, two youth committee members, together with academics in the Boston area, and with the idea that we would engage in this dialogue for a few months and kind of see what happens.
Yes, it was one of those things, right, where we were like, okay, we're going to put you in these groups, and
not with a lot of structure or guidelines, but you all did, you know, study Mr. Ikeda's philosophy of dialogue. Do you want to share a little bit about your group? Like, who was in your group? What was it like meeting them for the first time? And yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I remember it's so interesting because I remember prepping beforehand, right before we met with our, so my group was myself and another amazing young woman called Prachi, who's also part of the youth committee. And we were paired with an academic in the Boston area called Bernice, who was incredible. And we were actually supported by an Ikeda Center staff, Henri. So it was kind of like the four of us in this group. And, you know, before we met, I remember we had this session at the Ikeda Center in person. I remember we were given the bios of these academics and we had to kind of think through, like, what is it that we would ask them, right? What are some questions maybe that we would use to guide our dialogue? And looking back now, I see how different those questions that we came up initially were from what we actually ended up talking about. I remember at that time, right, based on just Bernice's bio, I was like, wow, this person's super accomplished, very, very, you know, well published, does incredible research on ethics and Holocaust. And I remember being intrigued by those things. And honestly, like the kind of feeling I think I had was, oh, this is someone I would, you know, definitely respect based on her accomplishments and the things that she studies and the work that she's done. So I think a lot of our kind of initial questions were very actually academic almost, and now that I think about it, because we were like, oh, ethics, like what would it mean to ask her about the ethics of XYZ? And yeah, so that was sort of the pre actual meeting. And then even when we met her in person, actually the very first meeting, which is really interesting, was in her old office, and at the time it felt very, I kind of felt like I'm meeting one of my professors in college, or like I'm going to office hours. And it was kind of more like a formal introduction. It sort of ended right on the hour and we were like, okay, well, nice to meet you.
Yeah, I know when we met initially, right, all together, I remember everyone had this idea of like what the dialogues might be like based on what questions everyone was preparing. But then once you sit down with people, I think even in my group, it just went in a completely different direction, right? We just naturally started talking about our lives and then it manifested into other things. So I was wondering, Nandini, just based on what you shared, you know, how did you feel going into each one of these sessions? And then how did you feel after coming out of those sessions? And did you notice a difference between the conversations that you were having in this group versus your day-to-day conversations that you were having with whether it's colleagues or friends? Like what was different, or was it different at all in terms of the kind of engagement that was happening with your small group?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I definitely feel like even though that first interaction, like I said, almost like for me, like a professor-student interaction, pretty quickly, I want to say in the subsequent sessions, it started to feel more and more just like we were, yeah, four people really kind of getting to know each other on a much deeper level. And I think the time actually started to like really fly by. So we would end our sessions and I would often feel like, wow, I wish we could talk longer. It felt like 90 minutes just flew by so quickly and there's so much more I want to learn about these incredible people I'm getting to talk with right now. And interestingly, right, not just Bernice, who of course is incredible and so accomplished, but also Prachi and Henri. And fun fact, right, Henri and I had already gone to college together, so I thought that I knew Henri pretty well. But, you know, as we all were in that group together, I think I realized that, wow, there's still so many things that we don't really get to kind of know on a deeper level. So unless we ask certain questions. So I think, yeah, we started just asking each other questions about our upbringing, where we grew up, our experiences, who were the people close to us. And I have to really credit Bernice because I think she kind of set the tone for asking some of those questions. And also, you know, I think as we got more and more comfortable, we also, all of us started sort of asking each other questions like that, deeper questions that maybe we don't really get to talk to or don't make the time to talk to, you know, or discuss on a daily basis. So yeah, I remember, especially at the time when we were in the middle of that project, I remember sometimes in the week or two after our dialogue session. And we would meet not even that frequently, honestly. It was like once a month, I think, and then sometimes with our different schedules, like it wasn't always necessarily easy to find like a very sort of regular time to meet, but it always felt like our dialogues just kind of, yeah, picked up from where we started or would still just help us go deeper and getting to know each other. And so going back to this idea of that the weeks after a particular session, sometimes I would actually really think about something that one of my dialogue partners said, and it would really relate to something that maybe I was going through in the moment. And I just remember kind of being like, wow, this is interesting. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, what you said, Nandini, reminded me that all your sessions, right, culminated into the Ikeda Forum, as you mentioned earlier. And so each of you presented at the forum, and I know each group picked a particular strategy or ethos of Mr. Ikeda's that really came to life in their dialogue groups. And the one that you and Prachi chose was that we create intimacy with dialogue partners by asking personal questions. So you going over some of those questions just now reminded me of your presentation. And one thing I was thinking about is, did you find it challenging at all to be in the space with, you know, you knew Prachi a little bit, I guess, but was it awkward or was it uncomfortable to have to talk about these really personal questions, or did you all just kind of dive right into them, or did you feel any like internal challenges in being able to open up with these people that you didn't really know?
I think it was a mix of both. Like, for example, I remember, you know, maybe in the first few sessions, I might have hesitated to ask Bernice like specific questions, maybe about her experience with her mom, who's a Holocaust survivor. And even though she, of course, brought it up herself and, you know, wanted to, of course, be respectful and not trigger anything. But I think as time passed, you know, it became more and more, yeah, just more comfortable to be able to share those. And I actually remember this moment where I really felt like at the end of one of our sessions, I think this may have been somewhere in the middle, I felt like at the end, you know, I think I probably gave Prachi and Andre hugs, and I felt like, oh, I really wanted to hug Bernice goodbye, but then I had this moment of hesitation where I felt like, oh, I don't know if that's appropriate, or, you know, she's so much older, is that just, you know, awkward or weird? But I think in the subsequent sessions I did, and it just felt so normal and natural and totally reciprocated. So yeah, I think that just spoke about how much we had really built that kind of friendship, honestly, you know, through those sessions. So yeah
that's I think one of the takeaways from each group was how much people were able to not just open up but to break down any walls that we usually put up around people. And would you say, Nandi, that, you know, in terms of takeaways from the project, you know, versus expectations you had going in, what were your overall takeaways about dialogue, but just in general, from participating in the project?
Definitely. I think it helped me realize, wow, we all have something to offer, and I can learn so much more from each of us. And actually, there was this one specific instance I remember where Bernice actually shared with us a situation that she had gone through. And it was really interesting because she really like asked us, like, what would you do if you were in my situation? And I was really taken aback by both her humility in, you know, asking us, almost, you know, as if she was asking her friends for advice. I remember just thinking, wow, I don't know what I would do. But I was actually really blown away by Prachi's response, which was just incredibly wise and mature. And yeah, it was just, again, one of those moments where it reminded me of the power of how we had kind of created this space where we all felt like we were equals, you know. And of course, we all had differences, you know, we all come from diverse backgrounds, have diverse experiences. But in the sense of how we came to that dialogue and how we contribute in like a human way, we're all equal. So I think that really helped. Yeah. And I was actually also thinking, Lillian, a little bit about your question, or, you know, your point about the dialogue strategy that we used, asking personal questions to build that kind of intimacy. I was thinking about it just today and I was thinking the culture I grew up in South Asia, a lot of times asking personal questions can be almost like a negative thing. And right. It's like this, you know, people will just like,
it's
often
rude.
Older people. Yeah, it's rude, right? Like often older people will just like ask you like, blah, 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 you know, and you're like, oh, wow. But I was thinking that it's so different because I think the intention is really different. And in this context, we were really going in with this sincere desire to get to know each other and also be vulnerable in our own ways, right?
Yeah, it reminds me of a quote from Mr. Ikeda about dialogue. And he says, dialogue is this courageous endeavor to know others, but also to be known. And that's so different, right? Even in the culture I grew up with, like, when you ask too many questions, it can be like you're being really nosy or trying to pry into other people's business. But the intention of dialogue, as he says, is really to deepen our humanity, you know, and to be able to connect with another person. So, yeah, it's interesting to think about the way we understand conversations or dialogue growing up versus like really the true power and purpose of what dialogue can bring for our lives. So the question for this dialogue project that we all entrusted you all with is, what kind of inner transformation does one experience through sustained dialogue with others? So I know you all had to answer this question towards the forum, and it was a difficult one to answer because, you know, it's like, what is inner transformation, right, at the end of the day? But now that you've participated in the project, did you see a change in your life?
Yeah, I think I went in with this idea of who these people were to some extent. And by the end of the dialogue, I really got to know them at a much deeper level that really sort of helped me. I know it sounds a little cliched, but really helped me just see the shared human experiences that we all go through, regardless of, you know, how old we might be, what our experiences might be, and all those different things that are different about us and are, of course, worth, you know, important to acknowledge and appreciate. I feel like that was really the biggest sort of takeaway. And I think also learning, right, that, wow, I can really get to know a stranger at a much deeper level if I sort of make this effort to kind of get to know them better and ask those kinds of questions. And of course, not just again, right, not in those kind of questions in a nosy way, but in that kind of an environment where I'm also being vulnerable and really making the time to get to know someone better. I think that was one of my biggest takeaways. And I sometimes do wonder, right? So I think when we, in that particular dialogue group, there were, of course, some, you know, differences between all of us. And but I do wonder sometimes, I'm like, wow, I wonder if I could engage in that kind of a dialogue with someone who has completely different, maybe political or social views about things. And and yeah, I think that would be such an interesting experience. And I kind of, yeah, I would love to have an opportunity to do something like that where I really get to know someone. Because I think that our experiment did show me that it's possible. So I think that would be sort of next level. Yeah.
Yeah. Even thinking about dialogue at the Ikeda Center, in some ways, right, we're in this bubble of Cambridge or Boston, and often we end up in the same space with like-minded individuals. So the dialogue is naturally kind of very refreshing or deepening. So I often think about that too. Like, how do we, especially in this current moment, right, in our country, like, how do we engage in dialogue with anybody?
Yeah, I mean, one sort of instance that does come to mind was especially last year during lockdown and, you know, spending a lot more in-person time with my housemates. One of my housemates, who I think is wonderful, but we definitely had slightly different views about something, and I would kind of find myself feeling frustrated when I would talk to her, and internally just feel like, she's wrong. Like, I just want to tell her she's wrong. And but I think also around that time, I had actually read Mr. Ikeda's lecture at Harvard University, where he talks about this idea of an invisible arrow that in people's hearts that is essentially like this divisiveness, right, or discrimination or the tendency to separate ourselves from others. And when I first read it, I was like, that's right. Like, everybody around me has that. That's so true. But then I think as I kind of, you know, thought about it more, I realized that same tendency exists in my own life, and that, you know, when I don't agree with someone, I just don't want to deal with them, honestly. Like, that's my kind of go-to. And but because, you know, having been exposed to this idea of dialogue so much, that's something I really want to continue to challenge. And I think recognizing that too kind of helped. And, you know, I can't say, oh my gosh, I completely, you know, transformed the way I spoke with this person. But I think having that awareness that, wow, I'm being judgmental right now, or I'm kind of, you know, clinging to my ego in some ways, did definitely help me in those interactions. And yeah, it's been pretty amazing, because I think that did help me open up, I think, more, and also be willing to just listen to this person more.
Yeah, I mean, that's so important, right? I feel like that's like a game changer, is when we develop that awareness of ourselves in those moments, you know, rather than just reacting emotionally to whatever is shared. I think that's so great, that even though you might still feel a certain way, but when you practice dialogue over time, I think you do kind of strengthen your ability to become aware of, where is it that this feeling is coming from, and how can I still, despite this feeling, engage in a way that honors this other person. So yeah, now it's been more than a year since the dialogue project, and of course so much has happened, like, in the world. And you've moved to another city since then. Do you still think about dialogue, like, in your day-to-day, like, just thinking about the current state of our world, and maybe on a micro level, like, your personal life and your work, has it continued to kind of play a role in your life?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's so interesting, because I do feel like this idea of dialogue, I feel like a lot more people are talking about it now, especially, right, in conversations about anti-racism and just creating more brave or safe spaces where people can really open up. And especially at work, for instance, I had the opportunity to be part of this anti-racism task force in my department, and I kind of was really thinking a lot about our dialogue project in some of these conversations that we were having, which was, you know, okay, how do we sort of fix these policies and institutional challenges? But it still felt like we weren't going deep enough, and that, you know, there were a lot of interpersonal, or even just in our interactions with coworkers, almost like a, it's not like there was any blatant sort of, you know, disrespect or anything, but I really felt like, wow, we would benefit so much from that same kind of experience that we had in our dialogue group, where we could really open up and learn about each other more. I really feel like we don't really have those kinds of spaces to do that. So I really felt like, wow, I really wish that we could almost create that same kind of environment again, where we could maybe in small groups. It's actually suggested that, so I'm hoping that that happens in my department. Yeah,
you mentioned safe spaces, Nandini, and I think that's so much part of, like, the larger conversation right now, is how do we do that? How do you think we can go about doing that? Is it something that I can do on my own? You know, for the dialogue project, it was this set space that you entered together, which was in some ways structured and very intentional, right? And so I've been thinking a lot about, okay, there's those spaces for dialogue. But then, like, in my day to day, am I able to create these kind of safe spaces?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. And I think one interesting thing I learned recently is about a brave space, which is apparently, like, even more than just a safe space, but brave space where you can also share honestly, even if, you know, there may be differences in opinion, but being able to really share it. So creating not just a safe space, but a brave space. So I thought that was interesting, and yeah, still more to learn. But I think absolutely, I think there's so much more I can personally do. And I feel really fortunate in that through my spiritual Buddhist community, I feel like I have that. And I think I often take it for granted because I don't think a lot of people necessarily have a safe space or a brave, you know, that kind of environment where they can just really share. And I think one thing that I've actually learned, honestly, from people like you, Lillian, and, you know, friends who've shown me through their own example, is I think the biggest thing I can do to create that kind of space is by actually being vulnerable myself. So thank you, because I've definitely learned that from you, among other people. And I think that's something I use even maybe unconsciously sometimes now. But when I really want to get to know someone, you know, better and hope that they can open up, I realize that it's a little challenging, but I also have to really kind of be okay with sharing. So I think I try to, in my daily interactions with people, you know, when people ask me, how are you doing? I think it's easy to just default to, oh, I'm good, you know, okay, how about you? And I still do that sometimes, but I'm trying to be more intentional about trying to share more honestly about how I'm actually doing, and hopefully open up a space for the person I'm talking with to do the same. So that's just one small way. But I do think that I read this quote from Mr. Ikeda about this idea that to engage in dialogue, we need to spend time on it, or we need to set aside time for it, which is so simple. But when I read it, I was like, that's so true. It's so practical and simple. But that's exactly what I think we often don't do. So I do think that creating those kind of spaces and time also maybe for us to really be able to have those kinds of conversations will, yeah, is something that we definitely need more of in our world.
So as Nandini and I both shared, their experiment with dialogue culminated to the 2019 Ikeda Forum, where she, along with 7 other youth, presented their findings on the transformational power of dialogue. The title of that year's Ikeda Forum was, Can Dialogue Save the World? Based on Mr. Ikeda's belief that dialogue is the surest path to peace. So I asked Nandini that after all of it, does she also believe that dialogue, though it might take longer, is the way to create true and lasting peace?
I really, you know, I deeply respect Mr. Ikeda so much, and I really want to have that same kind of conviction that he has. One thing I often hear people say or feel like, oh, wow, it feels like such a slow way, because I think often we want to see things, right? Like, there's like injustice, we want it to change. And of course, that's so important. But I really do feel like without that deeper kind of engagement, just surface level changes aren't enough. So I think when Mr. Ikeda is talking about dialogue, he also acknowledges, right, that all kinds of sort of revolution and social changes and economic changes are all important and have their place, but there is that need for that deeper kind of on a human level engagement. And without that element, yeah, these things don't really go deep enough. So that's definitely something I believe in. And I think for myself, like, I really want to explore and apply more this idea of the transformative power of dialogue and really like test it out for myself even more, right? Like, I think I have some conviction in it for sure, but I want to deepen that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that, Nandini. Yeah. And it reminds me of Mr. Ikeda often talks about how only through dialogue can we become fully human. And I used to think, like, what does that mean? You know, like, of course, like, we're all human beings. Like, what does it mean to be fully human? But you're right. In those moments when, whether it's with a good friend like you or with, you know, the other day I ended up having this dialogue with this representative. That there was like, we had a Wi-Fi issue, so we were on the phone. And then towards the end, she said, is there anything else? And I just ended up talking to her. And we just had this really amazing conversation over the phone. I don't know, you know, what she looks like. Well, we ended up adding each other on Instagram, so now I do kind of know what she looks like. But just that like 5 minutes or so conversation about where she's from and what's going on lately. And, you know, I felt after that call, I felt so alive. And I realized, like, the way you described it, it is this palpable thing that, and maybe it is what he's saying, like, that's our true humanity, you know, like, that's like the essence of our lives at work, you know, when it's really fully awakened in that sense. Yeah, so what you shared is so great. Is there anything, you know, you want to share with the listeners? Maybe your dialogue motto. What's something that maybe you say to yourself or you remind yourself to kind of live a life of dialogue?
Yeah, I think a few things that came to mind from, yeah, just from our conversation and that I hope to remind myself more is, I think, this idea of making the time to dialogue. Because I mean, I understand, right? We're all living such busy lives and often maybe that's not something we think about actively. But yeah, when I do kind of reminisce or think about those times, you know, at the Ikeda Center together in my dialogue group, really having such profound conversation, I definitely do miss that. And I really feel like that's something I want to have more of. And yeah, I think it's definitely possible. So that's one, I think, definitely making the time and kind of effort to, yeah, even reconnect with people and start those kinds of conversations. And then I think the second would be to really be more open and vulnerable with people I'm talking to so that they can feel like they can do the same. And I think the third would be that I want to continue to test out the power of dialogue, and I hope that the listeners also feel like they can test it out, you know, because it's definitely something that's accessible to all of us if we choose to, you know, take on the challenge and just test it out and see what happens. And then I'd love to hear what other people's experiences are with it too. So,
well, that's all the time we have for today. A few takeaways from my conversation with Nandini. One is that genuine dialogue starts with the sincere desire to get to know another person. And when we engage with others, whether friends or family or strangers, we actually have the opportunity to practice being vulnerable. And in turn, we're able to understand and know ourselves more deeply as well. Secondly, it's easy to talk with like-minded people, but when it comes to talking with people who are different from us or who rub us the wrong way, it may bring out a lot of resistance or negativity. However, when we realize that we can learn something from every person who comes into our lives, and that we all have what Daisaku Ikeda calls an invisible arrow of prejudice in our hearts, we can use each engagement as an opportunity to grow and transform our own tendencies. And lastly, it's important to make time to have dialogue, and that dialogue is not this grand undertaking that only scholars or world leaders do, but it's simply taking the time to get to know another person. At the end of each episode, I will share a quote about dialogue that inspires me. Today, this particular statement from Mr. Ikeda comes to mind. Dialogue is an adventure available to anyone, and sometimes it's an adventure whose outcome can change history. So stay tuned next month for our third episode, where we will be speaking to another youth who participated in this dialogue project along with Nandini. So please look out for more information on that. And again, if you are interested in learning more about the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue, you can visit our website at ikedacenter.org or follow us on social media at Ikeda Center. Again, we would love to hear your thoughts, questions, and experiences around dialogue. So please email us at podcast@ikedacenter.org. With that, thank you for tuning in today, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation here in the Dialogue Studio.